What is Manchester's future? From discussions held at EG's Future of Manchester event in the city itself at Victoria Warehouse, the future looks full of opportunity. Duran Roney, Chief Executive of Manchester City Council, first set out the local authority's vision for the city. Manchester will be a zero-carbon city, according to Roney, and will continue to tempt a millennial generation over to the north from its London City rival. It should be one of the most desirable places to live and work in the UK, if not the world, according to Roney. But making such an ambitious plan a reality comes with its challenges. From tackling a growing homelessness crisis to ensuring affordable workplaces and homes are available alongside flashy new developments, real estate has an important part to play in helping Manchester achieve its full potential. Delegates first heard speakers, including Aviva Investors Head of Asset Management Melanie Collett, Savills Head of Office James Evans, UNI Group Development Director James Heather, and Shoesmiths LLP Partner and Co-Head of Planning Lisa Tai, discussing how Manchester can ensure it is creating communities for tomorrow. Delegates then broke off into smaller workshop groups to debate how they think property should be ensuring that the regeneration of Manchester can be done with the local community in mind. Let's take a listen to what was discussed.
We are here live at the Future of Manchester event. We've just had the morning session where we've been talking about creating communities for tomorrow. It was a really great session, actually, and I was really pleased to see that so many questions came from the audience, so many that we couldn't get through them all, which meant that we at EG gathered four groups together to have a little discussion post-panel to see what the audience thought were the main key themes to come out of that, what we should be doing. So I am just going to introduce or get everyone around the table with me to introduce themselves, and then we're going to talk a little bit about those key themes. So joining me today for a little bit of feedback is Dan. Introduce yourself, please.
Yeah, I'm Dan Hargreaves. I'm a partner in the real estate team at Shoesmiths Solicitors, specialising in town centre regeneration projects.
Fantastic. Thank you, Sue.
I'm Sue Lewis. I have my own coaching business in Manchester. I'm a Manchester resident.
Fantastic. Thank you. James.
My name's James Heather. I'm Development Director for UNI, responsible for managing and running the Manchester office and the Mayfield redevelopment scheme.
Excellent. And last but by no means least, Lee.
Lee Mallett from Urbic, a former journalist and consultant to developers, local authorities, architects, regeneration agencies.
Fantastic. So, Lee, I'm going to start with you because you and I are in a room together talking with the audience. What were the key sort of feedback points for you that need to be discussed more, or that we need to sort of really highlight?
Well, first of all, I'd say there was an incredibly positive feeling about the future of Manchester. It was fundamentally underlying everything, and I think that was helped by the very clear way, for example, in which the chief exec, Joanne Roney, set out the city's vision of the key principles which it wants to see delivered by developers in their schemes, or thought about generally when regeneration happens. And I got a very positive vibe from in our session this morning that they feel Manchester's on, you know, everybody feels Manchester's on the right track. However, there's a definite tension, I felt, between the coherence which Manchester seems to be able to express about itself and a certain lack of clarity about the city's relationship with its surrounding urban settlements. There is this idea of 7 million people living in the sub-region up here, living in towns surrounding Manchester which are not enjoying success to the same extent as Manchester. And if Manchester is to take proper advantage of the infrastructure changes which are planned, either east-west or north-south in the form of HS2, a more coherent strategy for the overall region needs to emerge, and a more creative relationship between the city, which seems to be going gangbusters, and the rest of the region, which is still struggling in a post-industrial state. And I think key piece of the jigsaw in Manchester's future success is political alignment over the Greater Manchester strategic framework to benefit from, to enable everybody in the region to benefit more from the transport improvements that are proposed. And there is, somebody said to us afterwards, it's being kicked down the line. So the leaders in the local towns and Andy Burnham need to pick that up and they need to get it sorted.
Well, Joanne did say that, you know, we don't worry in Manchester, we just do, but clearly not quite yet. So, Sue, you are, as you said, a resident of Manchester, and you've been facilitating a group as well. Do you agree with Lee's comments, or were your group talking about different things?
Some agreement about some clarity around the vision. The vision was rightly laid out by Joanne very well, and there's still that kind of not quite sure if that's happening, and I think the impatience, things take time. So if the BBC, and in Salford there's an academy that links very closely with BBC, that's a generation before that the children come through there and into being part of the workforce of Manchester. There was a distinction in our session really about the city centre and Greater Manchester and whose responsibility is it to oversee the whole of Greater Manchester and not just the investment that's in Manchester, and the borders of Manchester do seem to do really well. There was some real points about public spaces, attracting families, retaining people. So it's not just about the cities for young people, but it's for elderly people too. You should be able to grow old in your own city. You should be able to have your children in your own city. You shouldn't have to move out because you feel it doesn't meet your needs anymore. So there was quite a few things around infrastructure there that came up as themes in our session.
Fantastic, thank you. And James, I can see on your piece of paper there's a big transport, so infrastructure was an issue for your group too?
Infrastructure was an issue that was discussed, as was, I suppose, the sort of the growing pains that the city is going through. We were talking about not just infrastructure in terms of transport, but the provision that is in the city in terms of housing and these schools and community uses. And really that's a function of the city growing, and the city is providing homes and apartments for students now in a sort of certain demographic. And there was a discussion around providing alternative uses, and that will naturally follow as the city grows and develops. And so what you're seeing is people living in the city creating communities which then support F&B, retail, cafes, cultures, other spaces. And all of that is then creating an environment where other people want to come and live in the city. And there's always this question around the amount of infrastructure that goes in and the provision that's made. But actually, I think Manchester's in a very good position in terms of it has got heavy rail network, it's got a light rail network, and there is a good provision. Yes, it's under capacity, and there's a huge demand on that, but that can be built on, and you're not building on, there's good foundations to be built on to help drive the city forwards.
Fantastic. And Dan, for your group, what did tomorrow look like for them?
Well, I think we talked a lot about the green agenda, about transport infrastructure. Eventually, we're going to hit some kind of boiling point within the city centre. There's so many infrastructure projects on at the moment, and it's, you know, you see days where it's almost at complete gridlock at certain times of the day. So there was a discussion around how, you know, in terms of attracting new talent and having these cycle highways that you see in other cities, how we can sort of drive that forward, and safety was a point that came out there. You don't want people cycling down busy roads. You need to try and sort of create these cycle highways, and, you know, in terms of the role that the regional towns, going back to the earlier discussion point, that was where we started off from, about how we can't lose sight of these other Greater Manchester authorities and their role in the growth of Manchester. There's examples of great development in places like Stockport and Bury, and Bolton's obviously starting on that journey, but those areas do need support. They don't have the same land values that, that the city centre does. There's issues around viability, but equally they need to be able to forge their own identity. We don't want to have 100 Altrincham Market schemes scattered around the city, which everyone points to as the exemplar scheme. These places have got to look back at their history and look back at what works for them in their particular locality. So yeah, those were some of the sort of key themes that we discussed.
Fantastic. I think there's so much there to work on and work through. And I think with all, when we look at communities for tomorrow, there's another C word, isn't there, that very often comes up that we haven't mentioned, but not as the word itself, but I think in the way that we've talked, that, you know, for Manchester and Greater Manchester to grow and develop and feed on all that great stuff, all the great history that it has and the great future that it has, there needs to be collaboration and everyone needs to just get on and do it. So thank you so much for joining us for this podcast, and let's get back out there and see what else the future of Manchester has to offer us.
After a quick brew, delegates heard speakers from the second session discuss how innovation and infrastructure can help develop Manchester and its surrounding area. Dr. Alan James kicked off proceedings with a rather radical solution to Manchester's connectivity issue, Hyperloop. Hyperloop is a new transport system being developed by Virgin Hyperloop One, which could see commuters hurtling down vacuum-sealed tubes at 600 kilometres per hour, making a typical three-hour commute by train between Liverpool and Newcastle just an 18-minute journey. Delegates then heard from speakers including Transport for Greater Manchester Head of Innovation Raphael Cuesta, Renaissance Director Helen Gribben, JL Hearn National Head of Infrastructure Planning Andrew Walters, and Connected Places Catapult Director of Digitization of Planning and Standards, Stephen Webb, who all discussed how developing Manchester's infrastructure could unlock new opportunities. Delegates broke off into their workshop groups to talk about whether Hyperloop was a pie in the sky or whether the north of England should focus on other infrastructure developments. Let's listen to what they had to say.
Okay, this is Damien Wilde. I've just stepped off stage at EG's Future of Manchester conference. We've been watching and taking part in a session on transport and technology and how it's developing in Manchester. It was kicked off with a fascinating session on the potential for autonomous drones and also Hyperloop that could connect cities across the north of England in mere minutes, journeys that take hours currently, which was fascinating. Then we moved into a panel discussion and we broke out into separate sessions as well, where the audience got involved and got a chance to offer their views. I'm joined by Andrew Walters from JL Hearn, Lee Mallett from Urbic and Jason Hawthorne from View City. And so Jason, lots of themes came out of the session that I was in, but what was the key theme that came out of the group that you ran?
I think obviously listening to all the discussion in the panel talking about the massive physical infrastructure that's needed for Hyperloop and others was this balance against data and access to data, and that becoming really a kind of major driver for how we connect cities and people in a more immediate and quicker solution. And actually it was, are we doing enough and putting enough data in? It was certainly one of the questions raised as well, is are we doing enough about how we can make sure that connectivity gets better and faster on that basis rather than the physical infrastructure? There was also a concern that by the time we create physical infrastructure, and it's taken so long to plan and deliver, that technology's moved on as well. And we're seeing this with even the buildings that we're in, that by the time they're built and delivered, they feel like they're out of date already. So there was a lot of concern around that, but also the enthusiasm for if we could create, you know, even it was suggested that free Wi-Fi through the northern cities would be a massive benefit for everybody.
Okay, yeah, those themes came out in the session that I was in. Very much so, and it seemed almost that there was a backlash, a sort of a desire to put the analogue into a smart city, not just the digital. Did you get that sense?
Very much, and again, it was the sort of interaction of people, the talk of Manchester and its universities and how amazing they are, and the culture and the sort of what that adds into Manchester as a city. And if you then all work from home and you're all using VR, that we lose a sense of that. And there was definitely agreement between the discussion that we were having that you need those social skills, you need to be able to meet people, you need to be able to be seen and heard for that creativity and inspiration to come forward. So analog, and actually how do you switch off? You know, digital is now pervasive in our lives completely. There was definitely a big discussion around how do we get away from it when we want to as well.
Yeah, that came through on the panel, that one of the panelists said that she was only able to switch off on trains, and if that her journey time got down to 6 minutes, she wouldn't have enough downtime. But Lee, another theme that came out of my session, and my favourite line, was that that tension between a visionary idea and yet the need to implement something. And someone did say, it's great to have these visionary ideas, but we don't even have an Oyster card in Manchester. Were there similar feelings in your session?
We asked the question in our session, how much of what you've just heard about from Dr. Alan James do you actually believe? And there was a rather stunned silence. You know, I think that he presented a really amazing vision, but the ability to deliver on it is still lacking. But for me, the key parts of that vision, you know, rather like the idea of having an Oyster card that enables something much bigger, were the notion that the North could unite its cities, they could become minutes apart from each other, and that would have this immense transformative effect on the global presence of the North of England, led by the London of the North, Manchester, which is clearly the most successful city in the North. And that offered the prospect of a really transformative idea.
I feel like Land of Hope and Glory should be playing behind you now.
I think Birmingham, Liverpool, Newcastle may challenge it.
They're all going to challenge it, and Birmingham could be a really key challenger to that idea, but it's not really challenging in the same creative, dynamic way that Manchester is doing at the moment. And I think that vision needs articulating and building into the narrative of the North's future rather more clearly than it exists at the moment. And you've got to, you know, get people believing in that, because the lack of a globally dynamic, unified North is destabilizing the United Kingdom's political systems, and it needs sorting out.
A lot of politics around transport, that was another comment made, and also comments around there being a lack of vision, Lee, not just at a local level, perhaps not principally at a local level, but at a national level. And something like Hyperloop, it was said, offers us an opportunity to lead and get back on the front foot. Did your group make that connection too?
I think that they're still struggling with the reality and the idea of how you can get behind something which is not sufficiently tangible at the moment, never mind getting it onto the national stage. So I think there's a difficulty there in terms of getting buy-in to the real vision.
Okay, thank you, Lee. And Andrew, what was your group talking about?
It's kind of the same. So there was a straw poll of whether or not we believed that Hyperlink was going to be delivered. Nobody put their hands up. Which, you know, there's a number of reasons for that. I think as much as it perhaps is potentially too far-fetched technologically, it maybe cost too much money, and the point that was made earlier, which is technology may change things, digitally may change things, and by the time a mega project like Hyperloop was finally delivered at great cost, it would be supplanted by another technology, a more effective one.
So just to challenge on those points, and I understand that you're reporting back, so I'm not trying to shoot the messenger, but the point was made that Hyperloop has been tested. It's a workable technology. Maybe the environment it gets installed into needs some testing, and it's cheaper than HS2 as well.
I think that's okay, so, Kay, and I do understand. I thought the arguments were really attractive, I have to say. I enjoyed listening to it. I could get my head around it. But the practical body of folk who were in that workshop were saying, okay, how? And what they mean by how isn't so much about cost, it's about you know, the disruption, the consenting, can the property market get their head around it? Does infrastructure come first, or is innovation comes from the property market in order to bring it forward? So there's a lot of complex ideas and concepts that people were getting their head around. So when asked that bold question, do you think it's going to be delivered? They said, nah. But that wasn't a thoughtless one. I think it was very much we understand the practicalities. We're looking at HS2. It looks as if it's faltering and it's falling over. And my goodness me, that cost, it's taken about 15 years and it's still not coming. We probably need to think differently. It's a slightly more cynical view, but you know, arguably perhaps more practical. And I guess being a Scot and listening to Northerners, they are practical people, and I get a sense that, you know, they're not necessarily Luddite in their approach. They are just being very practical about it.
Okay. And how about a sense that focus is being put on the wrong form of transport? So we spend a long time talking about national transport and these very eye-catching potential solutions. But one of my group said it takes her 40 minutes to walk to Media City. She's still in Salford, and it would probably be longer on public transport and two buses. Not enough attention on regional and local transport.
I think that is the case, and it was reflected in the quality of life issue. I think that people... It was the analogue point, and I think that's a really interesting movement, if it is going to be one that's emerging, which is, you know, we've had enough of this. And if we are going to be living and working and using local transport, which is good, we need to make sure that it's about quality of our lives. And we want to be able to go to work quickly, but not necessarily... it's about minutes, it's about getting there, enjoying our experience and getting back and coming back to the family and going to the garden, you know. And interestingly enough, the attractiveness, for example, of a Hyperloop, if we're going to use that as an example, of a 5-minute journey, let's say, from one place to another, is beneficial in a sense. If it gets me home for that extra hour, I'll be a very happy person. I can see that, they said. Equally also, the other aspect of this was, actually, it's kind of not the point, really. The point is that we should be enjoying our lives and not using transport to be the be-all and end-all. Our digital experiences are almost to the point of being overpowering, and that's where the analogue conversation is coming through quite strongly.
Okay, thank you. Those slamming doors behind us mean lunch is being served, so I should release you all to eat. So Andrew, Lee and Jason, thank you.
Speakers and delegates alike may have offered different opinions on the journey that Manchester should take to develop as a UK and world powerhouse. But a key takeaway from the sessions is that Manchester will continue to be a vibrant, energetic city, and it will be exciting to see how real estate can play a role in developing the city.